Makes What's your favorite animal?
Well, I'm going to say tiger or gorilla.
Tiger or gorilla? Pick one.
Tiger.
Siberian?
Orange.
This is Highly Social with Mike Eaton. Bitches, show Mike Eaton your titties.
Hi, welcome to Highly Social. I'm your host, Mike Eaton. We are brought to you by Golden Cricket. 10% off with code Eaton if you want to eat crickets. Find out why Sean Strickland hates them and Israel. What an interesting fella. He's got some bad takes. We are also brought to you by Crescent Canna. Dude, come on. Most people look at paper to read this shit to you. And I'm just coming to you live as a human being and letting you know that if you want 6 milligrams of THC and 3 milligrams of CBD perfectly mixed together in a fruit-based seltzer, then Crescent 9 is the seltzer for you. They also just came out with a new super-duper potent version that's 50 milligrams. Right up my alley. I only have to drink 4 to have a good time. Just kidding. 1's enough and I don't do drugs. CrescentCanna.com, use code Mike for 10% off anything site-wide. And we are also brought to you by The Creek in the Cave, the best comedy club in Austin, Texas. Shows 7 nights a week. There's mics. You've been trying to get into comedy. You have dreams. You watch this because you wish you were me. Get better wishes and come down to The Creek in the Cave. Very special guest today. We once had a podcast, and then it got cancer and got put down. And now Jesus himself came back and Lazarus this. And we've got the co-host of the Gaggle Boys. It's Eli Halpern.
Hey, good to be here.
Did that get you hard just watching me read ads from my brain?
Dude, you've gotten a lot better at ad reads. That was good.
Pretty crazy. It's nice to not have a script.
Yeah, you opened your third eye and contacted the spirit realm and were beamed down a script of the cannabis drink. That stuff was good.
Yeah, it's great. Those.
You do need 4.
Yeah, I need 4 of the regular ones because they're only fucking 6 milligrams. 24 is enough to have a good time though. Well, since the last time we recorded, I've gotten divorced. You've gotten pregnant with a company, and you didn't abort it. It came to full term. And you birthed Golden Cricket. You've been fighting. You've been rapping.
Yeah, lots happened, man.
I know.
Let's talk about how it ended and then get into our paths. So they gave us 2 rules. Don't say the N-word and don't talk shit about cops. When we started filming at Drinkin' Bros.
To be fair, they were very woke. They didn't just say no N-word. They said no slurs. And then we said all the other slurs. So we figured out it was the N-word that we couldn't say.
Anyways, I called a bunch of cops the N-word. And no, I talk shit about cops. It was, people are like, oh, what'd you get canceled for? What'd you say? I literally was like, oh, cops don't do anything. There's no good ones. They're all bad. That's what I said. And then they were like, hey, you almost shut down the whole network. You're done. And everyone was like, that's bullshit. Fuck those guys. And I was like, no, I agreed to the rule.
You did.
I broke the rule. It was my fault. I fucked up. And I can admit it. And a lot of good came from it. And it was a bummer also.
Yeah. But I mean, it happened. And it was also good because then you were gone from the country for most of the next like year after that. You went to Thailand.
Yeah. Thailand was cool.
What'd you do?
Shit. I got sober.
What?
I got sober. and then I relapsed again, but only on weed. I went to Thailand for
when was the last time you put alcohol in your body?
At least 8 months ago.
No way. I feel like I've seen you put it in here.
You haven't. You were just watching your reflection. And I was
there's
there.
There's no way I've mistaken you for me.
You were very drunk.
Okay. I'm starting to buy into this. It's starting to check out.
I showed up and I was like, what's up, Mike? And you're just standing in a mirror taking shots. And you're like, hello, Eli. And then you just started making out with the mirror. And then I was
I definitely knew that was me. What are you talking about?
I call myself you when no one's around.
Yeah. It's affirmations.
So Thailand was all right. I went out there.
Do you think they should just change it from being a Thailand to a win land or a lose land and just pick a side? fucking tired of this middle ground Thailand bullshit. You either win or you lose.
Tired?
That joke is.
But yeah, so, I got sober. I went completely sober for 4 months. I didn't touch anything. And then I got stuck in Orlando on a layover. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to start doing edibles again.
Mm-hmm.
Being bored is the worst thing.
Dude, I'm so jealous of people that edibles work on. I think, like, I wish that I had enough money to have science answer the question for me, but instead I just get to wonder, like, why do edibles not do anything to me?
Have you tried eating more?
Yeah.
What's the most you've ever eaten?
1,500.
And how was that?
Fine.
Not just sleepy. Not remarkable?
No, it wasn't, like, anything crazy. So I had one situation where I ate 1,000 milligrams where it really took me out. And I ate it on an empty stomach. It was before I started comedy. I was going out to my friend's 40th birthday in Temecula. Flew into Ontario, drove down to Temecula, got there a night early, and they were all doing adult party stuff because he's 40. So I was like, oh, I'll just drive up to West Hollywood and go see a show at the Comedy Store. I'll drive up to the Comedy Store. I get there. They're sold out of everything. Standby list is sold out. Like, fuck. I was so nubile at comedy, I didn't know there were any other venues there. I just thought, like, oh, it's the Comedy Store. That's where people go to see comedy. I didn't know there was a Laugh Factory or an Improv or anywhere else. So I just went to a dispensary. And I walked into the dispensary the same way an alcoholic walks into a bar. And I said, what's the strongest thing you have? And the lady said, we have the, I think they're called the Cordona Black. But it's a 1,000 milligram brownie that has like 10 milligrams or 10 grams of weed ground into it on top of that. So it's like just like a crazy super potent thing. And it's like labeled as the highest potency deal. And it has like all these warning labels, like this is 20 doses. Don't, you know, fuck around with this. And the lady kept saying stuff to me like, don't eat all of this. Don't eat all of this. And I was like, yeah, I get you have to say that to people that are a little bitch. So I ate the whole brownie in the parking lot. And then I started my hour and a half drive back to Temecula. And on my drive down the 405 or 605 or whatever that is, like 45 minutes into my drive, a police motorcycle comes lane splitting and shoots past me. And then he starts weaving through traffic. And I was like, what the fuck is going on? And he's making me slow down so I don't hit him. And I'm like, what the shit? And I'm starting to get kind of high. And we like all of me and the other car slow down to a complete stop. And then he stops his bike and just gets off of his bike. And it's just sitting there with the lights on.
Dude, that's happened to me in LA. I hate that.
It's like a traffic control thing they do.
Oh, God. The first time that happened, I was terrified. And I was in a similar situation.
And I'd never even heard of that. They don't do that anywhere else. It's just LA. They're doing crazy shit like this. So I'm like, oh, no, the president was murdered up ahead or something. Like,
are we all going to jail?
Yeah. How are they going to arrest everybody?
How big are these prisons?
Yeah, dude. So I'm like, I'm freaking out. I'm trying to figure it out. I'm like, this is crazy. And then like we sit there for what felt like 10 years, but I'm in a rental car with like no Bluetooth. So I'm just like listening to shitty radio and just like, God, the pores, gross. Like having no way to control what you're hearing is a nightmare in a car. So then finally the cop's like, all right, we get to go again. And like, so he drives off to the side and everybody, like, I think all of us were kind of like, can we drive now? You know? So I start driving and I remember thinking like, everybody's going way too fast because they're all flying by me. And I look down and I'm like, I'm flying and I'm going 40 and you know, it's a 70. So I vaguely remember pulling into Temecula. Like I remember like struggling, like you gotta make it. You got like talking to myself like I'm in war, like you got to do it for everyone, you know. And I kind of remember my hotel ish. I remember getting into Old Town Temecula. I wake up the next day. It is 7 p.m. So I slept like, you know, 18 hours or some shit. But I slept the whole time and I wake up and the first thing I notice is my hotel room door is open. I'm like, oh.
Like wide open or ajar? Yeah,
like wide fucking open, like completely open. Like I walked in and didn't do any efforts to close it.
Did you notice your fart smelled like weed?
I had a girl tell me that my cum tasted like weed at the subsequent party. But So I noticed my door is open and I go to close it. And then I see my rental car and I'm parked across two spots and the car door is open. I was like, oh, fuck, dude. So I put on some shorts and I go out to close the car door. And then I notice that the keys to the car are just sitting in the driver's seat.
I wonder how many people walk past and are like, that's a trap. That's yeah, for a fucking
18
car.
Hours, a car was just sitting there. An entire business day, a car was just sitting there with the fucking door open, illegally parked with keys on the seat. And everyone just at this hotel in Temecula.
This sounds
like
a Xanax story.
It felt like a Xanax story. God, you've seen me on.
So maybe I just need to eat more.
Tremendous amounts of Xanax.
We've both done some dumb shit driving. I floored it on the shoulder the other day.
I saw.
We were in like stop and go traffic. It was going on forever. It's right by my house. I was not put on God's green earth to wait in traffic. As an American, it is my right to stand up in the face of tyranny. And what do these tyrants want?
Tyranny. Tyranny, you fucking idiot. You're going to pop a tyranny driving on the fucking shoulder because there's a bunch of bullshit over there. That's why you don't do it. Back to your rant.
No, tyrant. Like it's T-H-I. Tyrant.
Yeah.
But like it's Thailand.
A tyranny. There's the Pat Seu.
Yeah, I went to Thailand earlier this year.
Dude, we ate.
I'm saying tyrant.
Yeah.
I'm not being
we
racist.
Ate a super Thai earlier.
Oh, that was so fucking
what
good.
A meal. What a meal.
Anyways, it's your right as an American to stand up to those red lights and traffic and just fucking floor it. Run those red lights, drive on the shoulder.
I think like that. What I found is the older I get, the less I really care about law. like when I was younger, it was like, oh no, like don't break the law. It's bad. Things bad will happen. And now at this point I've broken the law so much. I cannot think of a single calendar day that exists where I did not break a law. Between speeding, rolling stop signs, fucking maybe oopsie doodles at the HEB self-checkout.
I definitely drive like a criminal.
Possessing felony objects. It's wild that part of my reputation in the Austin comedy scene is that at any given moment, I'm the most likely person in the room to possess a felony. Not cocaine. I'm not a weirdo. I don't play guitar and freak out about Latinx. deep cuts.
I got an AR in the trunk, and that's legal.
Hear me before you see me. I got King Kong in the trunk. And then you pop the trunk, and it's a gun.
Yeah.
It's not a gorilla. Subwoofers. Yeah. Oh, or a gorilla. Dude, have you ever heard any of the stories about people with pet chimpanzees that then like rip their face off and shit? Uh-huh. There was a lady in, I think, like Pennsylvania or something. So it's a chimpanzee that was in a bunch of commercials for a long time. And then they sold it to a family that owns like a dealership. And like the
a chimp dealership?
No, a car dealership.
Okay.
And so they would just have the chimp in commercials where he's in like a shirt and tie in the passenger seat of a car. And then, you know, if you went to the dealership and you bought a car, you got to meet the chimp and take a picture with him, like sales tool. So he's like a good chimp the whole time. And then in his like older age, he started to get grumpy. So the lady that owned him, she would give him Xanax. And then one day when she gave him a bunch of Xanax, the chimp just had like a super freak out, ripped all of her fingers off and most of her face off. And there's a recording of the 911 call of her friend that's with her. It's like, you gotta send the police. There's a chimp ripping her face off. And they're like, what? Like they don't get at all what she's saying. She's like, slow down. You're telling me there's a chimpanzee ripping someone's face off? Are you on drugs? He goes, no, my friend owns a chimpanzee. It ripped all of her thumbs off. Like all of her thumbs. She only has two thumbs.
Oh, are you on drugs? Dude, I called the cops once because someone stole a laptop out of my house in college. And I was like, well, I have renter's insurance. I want to get insurance money. You got to file a police report. And they show up. This is in the morning. And they start accusing me of being under the influence. And I was not. It was morning.
Mm-hmm. I was not. It was morning. Perfect defense.
I had just woken up. But after that, I was like, okay, I'm not going to call the cops again. Which is why we got kicked off Giggle Boys.
Dude, I have such a like a weird relationship with the cops because part of me, like my cousin went through police academy and training and stuff and became a cop. And like I have met in my lifetime bunches of cops where anecdotally I know they're nice people. They're good people. They're just people. And also I'm super duper white. So it's never been like they don't look at me like a criminal. So that's part of it.
Austin cops are definitely the best cops ever.
First off, you're so wrong. They're the worst. Fuck you, Austin PD. Fuck all of you. You're so fucking bad at your job. Well, oh, no. No, that wasn't you, Justin. They suck so fuck. When my car got hit in front of here on my birthday, when I was celebrating singing karaoke here at Creek in the Cave, having a wonderful fucking night, and I walk out at 4 a.m. and my car was hit by a drunk driver in front of 50 fucking witnesses with four cameras aimed at it, with evidence and pictures of the Tesla that hit my car, it took a month and a half for the APD to ever respond to me. And then on top of that, the only reason we got anywhere is because I paid a crooked cop in a different place to give me her information from her plates. And then this might have to be edited out.
I didn't hear this story.
I paid a crooked cop to run her plates. He gave me her information. And then I called her pretending to be an investigator and lied and got her insurance information so I could file an insurance claim because the useless fucking Austin APD couldn't get off their fucking ass and do a job because they were busy riding horses.
Was the crooked cop APD?
No. Oh, okay. And when I talked to the investigator for the lady's insurance place, who I pretended to be, and three other people, all of them said that's the way the Austin PD is. They fucking suck at their job. They're here to arrest high schoolers for being drunk. That's their only job. No, dude, fuck you, Austin PD, you pieces of shit. You want to know something else? I don't pay for parking. Suck my dick. Guess what? You gave me a ticket. Oops, didn't see it. Guess a homeless guy took it off my windshield, bitch. Sorry, I got worked up, my bad.
I looked into the camera the whole time. That had to be crazy for your head.
You should just clip that and post it.
You know who would love that? My probation officer.
Are you still on probation?
Yeah.
Oh, fuck.
I haven't finished my community service.
I think we could bridge the gap. We could solve two problems at once here. Solve the homeless problem and the trigger happy police brutality by just having all the cops shoot all the homeless people.
Oh my God, dude. That would be a dream. So part of me like wants to be a good person and empathize. I want to love the homeless people. Some of the homeless people in Austin, I would be sad to see them go because they're genuinely nice people. There's a couple of them that wander up and down 6th Street and they make wares and they do stuff and they're trying. They're trying to pull themselves out of homelessness, but they're failing. And it
I like the artistic ones.
It wouldn't. Yeah, the artistic homeless are great. But the rest of them, if we shot them, it would be a net positive. Like there's nothing that homeless people are doing that we need. And like the whole right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Well, homeless people serve a purpose.
Which is?
To scare the middle class and keep us going to work so we don't end up like them. That's why they allow homeless to continue. They could easily fix it.
Of course they could fix it.
But it's a dangling carrot of fear.
It is. It's not a dangling carrot. It's a fucking dangling dynamite right behind you.
Yes.
And it's just like when you are like, oh, fuck, I don't want to wake up in the morning to go and participate in being a cog in the wheel of society. On your way in, you see six of them at the corner.
Neither do they.
Please, I need your change. Dude, if here's the thing, though, also, they're bad people.
Yeah, they are, dude. I was talking to a homeless guy. Well, I was talking to Casey Rocket outside of the mothership.
He's not homeless anymore.
No. Some homeless guy just yells. He like butts into our conversation. He's sitting down. He's like, they should bring public hangings back. And then Casey's like, all right, I'm going to leave you on that note. And he just goes back inside. And
yeah, I turn but it to would the be that guy.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. I'm like, I would kill you first.
For sure.
And I turn to him. I'm like, who should we hang? And he's like, the, and he just screams the N-word.
Jesus.
And for a second, I was like, that's fucked up. Like, this guy should pay for being racist. And then I was like, well, he's... I was like, well, what a piece of shit. And I was like, well, he's already homeless. So, I mean, yeah. I guess you get the N-word pass if you're homeless. Because, like, God, who's going to...
I wish I could remember which comedian it is that has that joke about being like, Tim Hanlon has a joke about being like, maybe it's not Tim. Fuck. There's a bunch of people that have, like, similar jokes. But it's about... a homeless guy that's racist. And it's like, imagine like living under a tent on 35 and coming outside, like stretching your arms and being like, at least I'm not an N-word. You know? Just like, what the fuck? One, kill the homeless. Two, if they were smart, over at 35 and Cesar Chavez, every single day of the week, 24 hours of a day, I've stopped at that fucking light so many fucking times, right off the highway. There is two or three men
with a bucket and a squeegee.
and they take turns. One of them will approach every car and attempt to wash. Most of the time, they ignore you and they just start washing.
So you'll feel guilted into giving them whatever you have. Sometimes then you tell them like, hey, I don't have anything. I said no. They go, fuck you.
I just start shaking my head.
I always do too, but sometimes they pretend not to notice. But if they were good at their job, those three guys would have a bucket of clean water. They would have two squeegees and they'd have one of them with a towel. And they'd go and do the all four windows.
If they were smart, they wouldn't be homeless.
They would do all the fucking windows. They would dry them off and then they would split all of the money. And one guy would be in charge of going to get clean fucking mop water and the other ones would be in charge of doing the squeegeeing and drying. And if they did that, they would make 45x because 90% of the time that you get a car wash, it's just because you need to see better out of your windows and that's the visual identifier that it's dirty. But if those fuckers came out and they scrubbed your rear view mirrors and then all of your fucking windows, they would make at least $50 an hour. You split that between three people, you know how much crack that is?
Not that much.
Enough, $50 an hour between three people? You're telling me a 50 bag of crack isn't going to last three people 20 minutes?
It's hard to share, you know? Whoever got it would like start chipping away and be like, this is all I got. And then they'd end up killing each other.
Great. Now let's you're down to two car wash guys and you bring a new one in. Yeah, it's the circle of life.
This guy came up to my car doing that. He came up looking at me like about to wash my car. I rolled down my window. I'm like, don't even fucking think about it. I was in a bad mood. That cheered me right up.
It does.
He got so mad. He like his whole demeanor was like, ugh. And then he flipped off God. He just gave a middle finger to the sky. It was like, ah!
That made me sad. I was on your team until he flipped off God. It's like,
and then he packed up all his
it's
shit.
It's not even you. It's God. God did this.
That's he awesome. He just goes, fuck! And then packs up all his shit and leaves.
Yeah.
And I felt so good the rest of that day.
Oh, I bet. Sometimes my favorite thing to do is that light at Riverside in 35 when you're going to get on the highway. There's one of them will stand on that very slim margin and you go, oh, and you move your hand on the wheel and you don't move the wheel. You just move your hand and they'll go, oh, and freak out. I don't do that.
I need to try that. That's fun.
It's a good time, dude.
That's a good one.
It's a great one if you can make eye contact with the person next to you and then do it. Because if you practice sliding your hand on the wheel without touching the wheel.
I don't want to upset someone that can afford a car.
But it's fine to. They're bad people. Have you seen drivers in Austin?
Yeah, they're pretty.
I want to shoot them right after the homeless.
There's too many. Dude, the traffic's getting out of hand.
Here is the thing, and what I don't understand, and this is probably a bad take, but I'm sticking with it. If you are an undocumented American and you do not have citizenship, do not drive under the speed limit or I'm calling ICE. I'm so fucking tired of these fucking pickup trucks with paper plates going 20 in a 35. It's not a school zone, Pedro. Let's speed it up. It's fucking insane. How do you think you're being inconspicuous? Also, it's crazy that inconspicuous has a racial slur in the middle of it that is so apt for the for the fucking situation. It's so frustrating. I live in the middle of just Little Mexico in South Austin. I hate my neighborhood. And all of them have 74 cars to a house and they all pull out without looking. No one uses a turn signal. And then everyone's going 10 like it's fucking bumper cars. What are you doing?
Yeah.
I keep getting worked up this episode. I don't know what's going on.
So you think Mexican people drive slow?
The ones with no license because they're like, I can't get pulled over. And it's like, I would pull you over for going under. The cops are so bad at their job. Fuck you, Austin PD again. Hey, you want to stop DUIs? Maybe hang out outside Whataburger at 3 a.m., you fucking morons. You would have a parade. You could pay off your salary in fucking one Friday, Saturday and not have to worry about it.
Yeah, I don't know anyone who's gotten a DUI in a while.
Pretty crazy. I bet you know some people who've drunk and drove.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably dozens.
A lot.
And tonight's lineup. No. No, it's just like I notice it every time because I have not had money in a long time. So all of the places I've lived have been like what I could afford. Not even usually the nicest I could afford. And the past few houses I've lived in have been working class areas, which is totally fine, totally great. The ones in Texas that I've lived in have been primarily Hispanic communities. And this is not a guess. It's not an assumption. It is I have seen all of my neighbors and tried to talk to some of them. And it's just fucking bonkers the way that I think it's, you know, part of it is I grew up and I had to go and take driver's tests and I learned the rules of the road and I learned right of way and I remember all of that stuff. And I know that if you follow driving rules, everyone drives better. when you pull up to a four-way stop and you concede right of way to someone, you are ruining the flow of traffic. You're a bad person. You should die. You should lose your license.
See, I'm bad at driving. So when other people are, I'm just like, yeah, we're all in this together.
But you did the correct thing and you bought a car that drives for you. You're a bad driver. You put a student driver sticker on your car and then you drive a car that does the driving.
No, that was on the Altima.
You should put one on the Tesla. It's you. You should let people know, like, hey, I'm doing my best.
No.
You're essentially trans. You drive like a woman. It's bonkers the way
you drive like a woman. I drive like an Asian man.
No, you
who
drive like
the best
a lady.
Women.
Okay. No, it's like here's another thing about my neighborhood that freaks me the fuck out is when I think of pedophiles, for better or for worse, I always think of white people. When you say like pedophile, I picture a priest or I picture a Boy Scout leader or I picture like just a weird, creepy dude that, you know, lives in the town and was just fucking kids.
When I think of pedophile, I think of the best Halloween house decorations.
Okay.
Just a big sign that says pedophile. Yeah. What is scarier to children than that?
They honestly, if they were more scared, they wouldn't keep getting got. You know, fucking idiots have no sensibilities. Fucking, if they were scared of, like, hey, are you scared of free candy? But real, Halloween's weird. Is that grooming? Hey, kids, you should take candy from strangers.
Yeah, it's weird, huh?
No, keep doing it every year. I look forward to it.
We need to end Halloween.
It's kind of problematic. You're telling kids to dress up all hot and slutty and then go to strangers' house and ask for candy?
No, there is stuff. Alex Jones talks about how the elites will like sacrifice kids on Halloween. That's like a big night for them.
All right, I'm back out.
But we don't have to get into that.
I'm back out. But I'm saying this. So when I think of pedophiles, I think of white people. It's just in my head, that's the thing I think of. And I forget that anybody can be a pedophile. It's 2023. You know, we're a woke America. So where I live in South Austin, the guy that lives across the street and one house over, he is a registered sex offender because he raped a 13-year-old. Scary. And his name's like Jorge Gonzalez. It's like a very stereotypical Hispanic name. Directly behind us, the neighbor that we share our back fence with, he is a registered sex offender for raping a 7-year-old. And his name is like Pedro Hernandez. Like they're like two very stereotypical, almost like interchangeable names. Do you think that at any point they look at each other and think the other one's really gross? They're like, oh, 13, dog, that's so old.
You're borderline homeless and you're looking at homeless people like we should kill them. So probably, yeah.
I have to imagine if you're like a registered sex offender, how do you even find friends? You'd have to use the app in like a positive way. Like the rest of us are like, ew, where are the gross people? And they're like, where's someone I can have a beer with? You know, like, let's just sit down and talk about how Nick Jr.'s gotten so fucking PG.
I'm sure they have plenty of internet friends. That's probably how they got.
But that's so tracked, right?
That's probably how they got to be a pedophile in the first place.
You think the internet made pedophiles? You don't think they've been fucking kids since Greece?
I just think the internet has opened many doors.
I've watched
so many opportunities.
Just enough documentaries to be an idiot. Like, you don't think they're fucking kids in Greece? I don't know anything else.
No, they definitely were.
I know, but I don't know when. I think Socrates did it.
Yeah, probably.
Like a little kid was like, stop fucking me. And he was like, ask it as a question. The Socratic method. You have to do it as a question.
We keep going. Who else?
Plato. Plato fuck kids.
I don't know.
The cave? Yeah, he was in the cave of children, right? Oh, if you get out of the cave, you're enlightened. Yeah, probably post-nut clarity. After you finish fucking that kid, you pulled out of the cave. You're like, oh, it was a bad idea.
Hercules?
He fucked a child Hydra. Which was weird because when you fuck one butthole, six more appear. He was like, no, no. Dude, keep going. I could do this all day.
I don't know Greek philosophers. Marcus Aurelius.
Oh, Stoicism. He was the first guy to neg a child and be like, I don't even feel anything. That kid was sucking his dick and he was like, I shall not react for I am a Stoic man. And that made that kid incredible at sucking dick. He's like, I'm going to get a reaction out of Marcus Aurelius. I will be the greatest cocksmith in the land. I am actually not comfortable with how good I am at this game anymore. Yeah, I don't like the let's turn everyone into a pedophile game. I don't want to play anymore.
The fucked up part is I don't think you're turning them into anything. No. I think they were.
I'm pretty much just nailing it.
Dog. Yeah, yeah.
I've been on Reddit. I think I'm correct. Dude, all right. So we were at Skankfest together.
Yeah, Skankfest was awesome.
Unfucking believable, first off. I want to say something that also is probably, it's also weird to say this is controversial after the things I've said so far, but I thought Brendan Schaub did a great job at Skankfest.
I didn't see him.
He said
he liked my haircut.
So I've seen his comedy before.
And then I made a joke about how I have to cut it now.
I've seen Gringo Poppy. I've been on the same boat as every other self-respecting comedian. This guy fucking sucks. And the whole time I've always thought like, man, if he could just be a little more self-aware and a little more humble, he's got so many fucking memes with the way he talks. He's got so much going in his world. If he just accepted the fact that he's not like a developed and professional comedian yet and blew up because of his proximity to Rogan and his UFC career, he could really get something going because he already has a fan base and he has a hater base. And all of those haters just want to be fans, but he's not giving them any reasons to. And then I watched his first set at Skankfest and I thought, everyone's right. This guy fucking sucks. I was like, damn, what a fucking loser. He's doing hacky fucking open mic jokes and not talking how bad he is. And then halfway through the set, he switches it up and he starts being self-effacing and self-deprecating. And I saw a glimmer of, okay, maybe he's not the fucking worst. And then he did Stand Up on the Spot, Jeremiah Watkins' show. And he came out and the way he answered the questions and the way he played along, he got that he was a joke. And he played into it. And it was like, really like, man, I have a lot of respect for this guy. He could have very easily not shown up to this event. He knew he was coming into a lion's den of a bunch of offensive and crass and amazingly mean people and a fan base that wants to see blood.
I mean, he can beat all of them up.
No.
Yeah.
Lewis has a gun. You know, it's Vegas.
Lewis can't fight.
He doesn't have to. I think he can fight a little bit.
I sparred him.
How was it?
I could beat the shit out of him. Great guy, though. I love Louis J. Gomez. He's fucking hilarious.
You think you can beat the shit out of Louis?
He's a nice guy. Dude, yeah, we sparred.
You heard it here first, folks.
I'll fight Louis J. Gomez.
Eli
Halpern
challenging Louis J. Gomez. Winner gets to have a career. Oh, what's that? Lewis pulled out? That's crazy. I guess the prize wasn't enticing since it's his fucking life.
No, Louis J. Gomez is a cool fucking dude. He's a respectable, like, awesome human being that, he was like the mastermind that pretty much put all that shit together.
Yeah.
I mean, with the help of a lot of amazing people and all the Creek staff and everyone and
no
people,
kidding.
Gas station guys. But like, he's kind of like the kingpin of the whole operation, it seemed. And just the way he treated everyone with so much respect and stuff was awesome. And just seeing him just fucking doing whatever the fuck he wants and saying what all those guys that were performing, it was just so inspiring, you know, just doing basically what we're doing, but having like people care.
Dude, it's interesting to see that when a guy shoves something in his own ass on a podcast, I lose respect for him. But when someone else shoves something in a guy's ass on a podcast, I gain respect for him. Because Gavin McInnes shoved a dildo in his own ass and I was like, fucking loser. But then Big J shoved a gun up Lewis's ass.
What?
On a pod last year at Skankfest. Dude, the craziest part is three different dudes paid like good money in an auction to watch the gun go in. I was like, dude, if you're that guy's girlfriend, you have to know he's gay.
Yeah, that's weird.
If you're paying money to see a gun go in someone's ass, you got raped in a way that I can't even explain. That is some weird trauma, dog.
Yeah.
Ooh, Wait, let me do crazy fucking. All right, sorry, continue.
Let me go into the Skankfest. So I sparred sparred Louis J. Gomez.
Who else did you spar?
I sparred Sam Hyde. Sam Hyde might be able to beat me up if he got a lucky shot. He knows how to fight. Well, Louis J. Gomez knows how to fight, but less than me. Sam Hyde won a boxing match, which I haven't done yet. And then he was like, I'm never doing that again. That was so fucking hard. I sparred Sam Hyde. Sam Hyde's a lot bigger than me, by the way. Mm-hmm. I mean, you saw him, but people that
he's a monster.
He
dude.
Makes me look small. I think he said he was like 270. And he doesn't have that much body fat. He's
really
like,
doesn't.
He's muscular.
He is built like an NFL player that was raised in a swamp. It's fucking. He's terrifying to look at up close. I took a picture of him with Adam Lucky, and he's wearing a cowboy hat and his glasses, and he made like a very goofy face where he like flexed all of his face muscles. And it really was just like, it gave me flashbacks of when like one of the tards got a hold of something and you were like, defense, they don't know how not to hurt us.
Yeah, Sam Hyde's like kind of retarded.
It's awesome. Dude, I wish with all of my heart that I had found him a decade ago.
Yeah, he's...
Going into Skankfest, I had no idea who he was. I'd never heard anything about him. No one had even said his name to me, to my recollection. It never dinged any bells. And then Adam Lucky grabbed me and was like, hey, you and Darian need to watch this, because he was premiering World Peace 2, his Million Dollar Extreme sketch thing. And it was just like Gillian Keeves if they weren't ever looking to sell it to a network. It was so irreverent and so edgy and so much shock value. But there were some things in there where it was like genuinely brilliant writing. I laughed so fucking hard at some of those sketches. And it's just wild to see, like, in this day and age, there had to have been 600 people in that theater crammed in like sardines watching this, and a white guy yelling the N-word in a sketch. Not in a racist way at all. It was a character that Sam Hyde was playing. For context, Sam Hyde is playing a black guy on a date that is like an entrepreneur. And he's on a date with a woman and he keeps using.
He's in blackface yelling the N-word 40 times, but it's not racist.
It wasn't. So he wasn't saying it to disparage black people. He was playing a character, and the character wasn't like demeaning or derogatory or like a stereotype. It was based on like a real person. And it was,
the fuck are you talking about?
It was a caricature, you know, but it was a hilarious caricature. And it was enough that like everybody there was laughing uproariously, but not in a Klan way. Like, it was just funny to hear. Like,
is anyone convinced?
Look, man,
you were the one wearing a white hood.
I was trying to start a movement. You know? Like, hey, listen, if we wear these all around Fremont, free drinks. You know?
And then they did a Q&A at the end.
I didn't stay for that. I left to go do a spot right after.
So I'm not going to explain why this was said or what my judgment is. I'm just going to tell you what was said. It seemed weird to me, but some guy yells out, they do a Q&A. He's like, what's the worst thing you've ever done? And Sam is on a panel and he just goes, worst? Who cares? And he's like, oh, I care. What's the worst thing? And he's like, shut the fuck up. Get this guy the fuck out. Can someone get this guy the fuck out of here? He looks around. There's no security to kick people out. That's not happening here. Everyone's like on the same page.
On mushrooms. Yeah.
So he, I hope this guy was on mushrooms too. He gets up and walks over to the guy. And he's like, get the fuck out of here. He grabs him. He said he grabbed him by the neck and like pushed him out. He's like, get the fuck out of here. And everyone was just kind of like, what the fuck? But then he goes and sits down and they're like, yeah.
Dude, I would love if that was like a plant in the audience. And there was just a guy that was supposed to do that. And he was just like, I want to fuck with everybody.
I don't know. I would think that were the case if it was anyone else. But Sam Hyde is legitimately insane.
I won't reveal too much just because it's...
If you don't know who Sam Hyde is, look up Sam Hyde father figure, Officer Maggot.
And look up Officer Maggot. That's all you need to know about who he is as a person and a comedian. But also, I will say this, I did some Googling afterwards and I couldn't find any receipts or paper trails, but he has been alleged to have donated to like a neo-Nazi guy that founded the Stormfront website. So,
oh no, that's a meme. So there's this whole
So this is the thing. So here's the thing. I looked into it, and if you type in Sam Hyde neo-Nazi allegations, you get a bunch of news articles, but none of them are reputable news sources. It's not CNN. It's not MSNBC. It's not even Daily Mail. It's a bunch of like made up fucking bullshit like sites like healthmedia.com type shit. And then there's also all of Sam Hyde's followers have this thing. There's a picture of him with bleached hair and a gun that it's a meme for them to post after any mass shooting.
That's been going on for a long time.
For like a decade.
Yeah.
Like you go back on Twitter and there's just a picture of Sam Hyde with a gun, all skinny and not roided out. And they're just like, this is the suspect. He's a fucking rapist. And they just say the worst stuff they can about him and post it.
Yeah.
Con men podcasts do that. They join in.
I don't know about that. I saw
Coop and them.
What was it? I think Doja Cat posted a picture with Sam Hyde on a shirt.
Yes.
So Sam Hyde.
So that also took up 90% of the search results.
I think something that's really funny about
him. Oh, we also can't play this on the pod. It's vulgar.
And long.
But you should watch it.
You should. But Sam Hyde, he's just so ugly that just him making a facial expression is funny.
Well, the reason I took a picture of him with Adam Luckey is it was so funny. There were like 10 different instances at Skankfest where we would all be in a green room and I'd be next to Adam and him and Sam Hyde would make eye contact and they would just look at each other like. It was like there can only be one alpha pedophile. It was such a funny thing. Dude, I love recording here so much.
Yeah, this is nice.
This place fucking rips.
I'm very comfortable.
So one of the things that I miss from Giggle Boys is that we have so much shared history. And you've also just constantly, since I've known you, have done just crazy numbers with women. And you've always done crazy sleuths. And I'm curious, recently in Austin, have you had any funny whore stuff happen? It's so fun to be able to ask this. You can say anything but slurs about this. How cool is that?
Listen, women watch my podcasts
and still choose to sleep with you. That's on them.
That's not confirmed. Who knows how many women I've DM'd that they looked at my shit and were like, nah. But then again, I guess that is a matter of time type thing. I don't know, man. I didn't have anything prepared.
Damn. I was hoping you had like a good recent one.
No, I've been celibate recently.
Yeah, all right. Well, that's not true. You were saying something we warmed up that proved that wasn't true. So you went to Thailand, you came back. You've been getting back into comedy.
Yeah.
And you've been doing jokes again.
Yeah, when I came back from Thailand, man, I was on a show like every other day for like a month. And that was awesome. And I was like, yeah. And then it stopped.
Dude, it's been very wild to watch like the ebb and flow of shows for me. I was getting booked constantly. I mean, I couldn't like fall down without a show on that day. Thank you so much. Cheers. The Creek in the Cave. And shout out bartender Zach Lapp, the number one.
Zach got blacked out and punched me in the balls.
That's so fun. Say more stuff.
Bro, he was so drunk. I think Brandon was like carrying him around his arm and he's like stumbling. His eyes are bouncing around. He'd been busting his ass all weekend at Skankfest, working hard.
Hard.
Just get making things happen. And he wasn't partying at all. You know, he's working. So he finally gets a chance to drink. This is at 8 a.m. I had just woken up. Because
I'm responsible now that I'm sober and I go to sleep at midnight and I wake up around 9 a.m., 8 a.m. So 8 a.m., I'm walking through Golden Nugget trying to get like a coffee or something. And he's just fucked. And then I'm like, what's up, dude? And his eyes are rolling around in his head. And I'm like, oh, okay. And then just out of nowhere, he just fucking goes, hey, Eli. Punches me in the ball so fucking hard. Well, not that hard. Anything's hard to the ball, but he's, you know, tiny and frail. And then I'm like, what the fuck? And then I just start punching him in the abs. And he's like, oh, what the fuck, dude? I'm like, I'm going to keep punching you until this stops hurting. And then he apologized to me the next day.
That's so funny. Dude, Zach did me. Dude, it's like one of the greatest compliments to my comedy career. Zach works here as a bartender. He has seen so much comedy. He has seen headliners, he's seen features, he's seen open mics, he's seen everything in between. And one of the shows that he was running in the Hippo Tank, they needed someone to go right after Mark Norman. And shout out Miranda Jacobs from Nashville. She was working and volunteering. While Mark is on stage and getting on stage, she goes outside and is gathering everybody from right outside the Hippo Tank. I was like, come in here, Mark Norman's on stage. So that theater suddenly is full. It went from 100 people to 400 easy, maybe 500. I mean, it's fucking packed. And then Mark is killing. He's doing stuff that, like, I've seen before. I've seen, you know, online. But it's their certified killer jokes. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not like, hey, let me fuck around on some new shit. Like, it was like, hey, let's do, like, the killers. And then there were, to his credit for sure, like at least 3 minutes of this that were like brand new things that he was working on. And he's like, all right, we'll go back to the book, you know, like doing his thing. But he's killing at a very high level. And then Zach put me up next. I was like, oh, shit. And that day I was like pretty hungover and was like, all right, let's see what Mike can do. And I was also crazy rusty because I left to go do this fucking documentary with Darian. And outside of the 8 minutes I did on stage in Albuquerque, New Mexico, the Gaza Strip of the Southwest, it's a fucking nightmare town. And outside of that, I hadn't done any fucking shows or mics or anything in 2 weeks. So I'm fucking rusty. I did a show my first day in the tank and I got the rust off and I felt like, all right, I'm back in form. And then I follow him, he's following Mark Norman, him shaking my hand. I told you, you were in the crowd. I was like, please take a picture. This is fucking cool. And I got up there and just the immediate response from the crowd on the first joke, it's like, we're in this. Like, I'm here. Let's do this. And I did a good job. And like, I kept the energy there and I kept all the people. I didn't walk fucking anybody, which is huge to do in that scenario. Just because it's so easy. If you're at a fucking festival and
like Mark Norman's gone.
Yeah. You just saw the A++ headliner. You're not seeing anybody after that that's fucking better. You're just not. Yeah. Like, you're not going to be more excited. And I have a good set. And then Jeremiah Watkins goes on next. And he does like a very avant-garde, very funny thing where he's like yelling at like one of the stage lights. But it was just so fucking cool to feel like I belonged. It's like, man, killer, killer, killer. And it was all completely three different styles and three different ways of doing stand-up comedy. And all of us fucking crushed. And it was just like, man, I'm doing it. I'm here. That's such a good feeling. And that was because of Zach. So shout out Zach.
Yeah, Zach got me up too. And yeah. I also crushed in front of not nearly as many people, but it was a great set.
That room was, shout out to fucking Rebecca and Christine and Lewis for all they did for upgrading Skankfest from last year to this year. Because the 2022 tank stage was, it was still great, but it was a stage. You were 20 feet from the fucking crowd. And then there was like a shitty step and repeat backdrop taped up on the part that was like flapping in it. And then the green room was, there was a single metal bar with a flimsy curtain, like a 50th of the thickness of this one that separated. So you would have like a couple of people sitting on folding chairs back there and you would just get right on stage. And then this year it was like a real stage with like a real side stage with a real green room. Like all of it was just upgraded 1,000%. And the shows ran so much smoother and there were so many good people. Did you watch any comedy?
Yeah. Yeah. I made sure to see a lot of the Austin guys.
Mm-hmm.
Ty Rivera had, probably the best set I've ever seen him do. Darian had the best set I'd seen him do.
Yeah. In Sheath?
He had no in the tank.
Okay.
I heard, maybe four jokes of his that I'd never heard before. And I just cracked up harder than any of his sets have ever made me laugh.
Hell yeah.
And he usually makes me laugh anyway. So it was solid. And then Adam Luckey had one of the best sets I've ever seen.
Yeah. Dude, those crowds, you can't say it enough. And like, you just don't get it until you get there. But like, those crowds are so on board for comedy. They just want to laugh.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why my set went so great, dude. Cause I just.
Dude, you go to an open mic. It's the opposite. Everybody wants to see you fail because they want to be the funny one. And that's just the overall sentiment until you break through to a level where there's like respect and endearment and I want to be him one day. You hope they crush because it's an idol thing. But like, it's a very mixed sentiment. When you go to a show, people are ambivalent. They came out because they want to see something funny, but you still have to impress them. And there's varying levels of that in LA. If you're not famous, you got to do a lot to impress them. Here, if you're famous, you don't have to do much. But if you're not famous, you still don't have to do like a crazy amount because they're still on board with the idea that Austin's a good comedy city. But when you go to Skankfest, every single person in the crowd just wants you to be as fucked up and edgy and funny and crazy and fuck the norm and fuck everything else and fuck people's feelings. Let's just hear the jokes. And you can say a premise that you've just been thinking about and like, God, I hope this works. And they're like, dude, what? Say more.
I love a good premise chuckle.
It's the king of premise chuckles at Skankfest. You up there and you're like, man, I got to stop raping people. And everyone in the crowd is like, no, you don't, dog. Keep raping. And you're like, let's fucking go. Like, it's one of those things where, like, you can't think of a dumb enough thing if you're like, if you get up there and you're like, I want to hate Saudi Arabia, but not letting women drive is a fucking brilliant move. Like, the women are like, we shouldn't drive. Like, it's fucking awesome.
Yeah, dude. That's like what really got me into comedy was just shock value, saying the worst things ever.
Yeah. And there's a bunch of people there that like, because shock value, it's like any other like comedy thing. It's an art form and you can elevate it and you can take shock value. It's not just saying a racial slur, which is still sometimes pretty funny.
It's like saying three racial slurs together in a fun way.
It's like getting you all the way there and like having all of the pieces of I'm not going to say a racial slur. And then you're like, and then I said a racial slur. They're like, no fucking way you said it. But it's just like there's, and then on top of that, you have people there like Harlan Williams. Did you see any of his sets?
No.
Dude, that guy is unfucking believable. The stuff that he says, he does crowd work that has nothing to do with the crowd, and it's still effervescent.
Yeah, an example.
Like, he'll ask someone like, man, what do you do for a living? And she'll be like, I'm a server. He goes, you ever get home late at night after shift and you're real tired, and so just to make yourself feel better, you leave a stick of butter on the counter for 30 minutes and then you rub it on your nipples like a corn cob? She goes, what? He goes, you will. And then he'll just move on to another thing. And it's just like absurdist shit like that where like it plays in and you're like, what the fuck is he talking? And then he gets back into a story and it's just like the whole time. And then
I think absurdism is only... You're only able to accomplish that after you've built up a brand for yourself.
That's been his brand the whole time. It's always been silly, goofy, because there's different kinds of comedy. There is comedy that freaks you out. It's like Jason Rouse, where you're like, there's no fucking way that he's talking about fisting this old woman and doing an accurate paint sound.
Jason Rouse nails shock value.
Jason Rouse is the epitome of dark humor. He is the number one guy when you're like, who do you want to see that's going to make you question whether or not this is okay and laugh anyways?
I saw him like have like not a great set at Secret Show and on the show you were on. And it was funny. It was even funnier seeing him not do as well because he has all these jokes about like, don't punch me in the face after this. And like all these things, like don't call the cops on me. And this time it seemed like real. Like I've seen him do all that before.
Yeah.
But in this, seeing it not go well seemed like he meant it.
I'm going to be out front. Please don't punch my face. You know, like, but that's like, so that's a brand of humor. It's like that kind of thing that Jason Rouse does. And it's undeniable that if you put that in front of enough people, a chunk of the population is going to find that funny. Then you have the complete opposite, which is like the Jerry Seinfeld, John Mulaney, Mike Birbiglia observational humor, where they're describing a situation and making it so familiar to you that you wonder if you've ever seen a room before. It's you hear them talk about things that are so specific. John Mulaney has a joke that I always point to, like, is the perfect clean joke of he's talking about how when every time you see a depiction of a pirate's gold chest, it's overflowing with gold coins. And it's like, do these fuckers not know how much gold fits in a pirate chest? Like, you've never, and he doesn't say, he says it all nice and PG TV worthy, but it's like you've never seen it. And then you think back to it, every pirate has an eye patch, so they have no depth perception. And it's just one of those things where it's such an obvious connection that you've never made before. And then you start to think like, what else in the world have I been looking at and just never seen these things?
I would love to write a good, clean joke like that.
Yeah. Nate Bargatze is the master of it, of talking about things and you never realize he's doing a clean joke and it's a clean show, because it just feels like he's reporting on things about life that you've never seen before. Then you have like what developed out of those two in the amalgamation of that in the middle of like Tom Segura, where he will take things that you may not have seen, but he will make them familiar and he will comment on things that are so grotesque and weird and make them personal and relatable. The story about the girl with two heads, where he's like, can we all just admit to me and more importantly to yourselves that you want to see it take a shit? And it's just like a piece of you inside of you that's like, fuck, I kinda do. You know, like it's that piece where you're like, I don't want to admit this. I don't want anyone around me to know that I think this is funny, but that is funny.
Yeah, he kind of like, it's kind of like posing a question that you're like, I would like to know. I don't know the answer to that. I would like to know.
It's between the macabre of Jason Rouse with the grotesque, gross nature of revealing what life is really like.
Well, and then you have like what you were saying about Harlan Williams crowd work. That seemed like the absurdism, which I would put in the same vein as like Sam Hyde and even Casey Rocket.
Well, but what they're doing is they're subverting, because all of comedy is about subverting expectations. You don't expect Jason Rouse to say the gross thing. You don't expect John Mulaney to describe a situation you've been in before in a way you never thought of. You don't expect Tom Segura to bring up a chick with two heads and then make you feel okay about laughing about it. And with Casey and Harlan and Sam Hyde and a lot of these absurdist people, the alt humor is that you don't expect anything that's about to happen, but that you've been able to find the through line that they've fed you. Like when you hear Harlan Williams do these jokes, or TJ Miller is another great example of this. He'll do something where he'll play the nose flute. And part of the bit is he's playing a nose flute on stage at a fucking festival that sold expensive tickets. Part of the bit is, how is he good at nose flute? You took time to get good at nose flute. And then part of the bit is a nose flute. What is a fucking nose flute? And then part of the bit is the words he's actually saying. Like it increases upon itself. And with Casey, it's the same thing. It's like, what do you mean release the documents, Joe Biden? Like, what? How does this have to do with Joe Biden? And then it's, how does this guy know who Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi is? And then it's like, did he just say Jar Jar Binks? Like, it's, your brain never takes time to catch up. So your expectations, anything you thought might happen is completely subverted. And that's what the absurdism is that absurdism is you only have meaning if you ascribe meaning to it. And so what Casey and Harlan and these guys are doing is they're ascribing comedic value and undertones, and they're taking unrelated and wholly different subjects and putting them together in a way that you're like, oh, fuck, what?
What do you think your category is?
Special Olympics, mostly. It's like a make-a-wish thing. They're like, well, we want to see what happens. He's probably going to die soon. The expectations is like, he won't make it long. And
you're getting your wish.
I am. They're looking. No, I think I fall somewhere. My biggest comedic influence is probably Daniel Tosh. And I think that my,
I didn't know that,
goal with what I want to do with comedy is talk about, in the same way that Segura does. He has a joke on Sledgehammer that's probably my favorite fucking joke of the special, where he says, I was in the shower with my son, and it's an awkward situation because he's so small and his head is about dick height. And one time we're showering and he looks up and he goes, Daddy, why is yours so much bigger than mine? And he goes, well, because I'm hard. You know, I'll show you. And then he pantomimes like he's jerking his son off. And it's such a funny fucking joke to me, because what he's presented is like a situation where you have the anxiety of like, oh, this is going to go bad. And then all the ways that you think it's going to go bad, he's like, I did it the funny way. He's so likable in that situation, and it's so bonkers that it's real, is that you don't think like, what a pedophile. You just laugh. You think it's funny. And so like, what I'm trying to do on stage is, I want you to know that nothing that I'm saying is serious. I just think this is funny, and I'm telling you a thing that's funny, and I hope you think it's funny too. And it's just like, here's what's happened in my life, and I made some very bad decisions, and you've probably made some very bad decisions. Imagine if you didn't have a day job. Imagine if you didn't have a wife and kids that you were worried about their judgment. Imagine if you didn't care what your parents knew what you did, and you just lived life by saying yes to stuff. It could look like this. And everybody has these green grass dreams of, if I just was finally free and I didn't have the job, I didn't have the thing, I didn't have that, I would be this person. And they always have a dream about who that could be. And then I, through whatever happenstance have been given a life where I can go and say yes to these things. And I end up getting a hand job from a lady in a massage parlor in Clovis, New Mexico. And what it turns out is that when you're given unlimited freedom, you're still a fucking idiot. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, oh, you escaped the wife and the kids and the job and you pulled out of society and you're chasing your dreams. What does that look like? Not great. It's going pretty rough. You know? Daddy's got an overdrawn bank account. You know, like, it's fun to tease them with the idea of what their life could be and then show them the reality of it. That's the genre I'm trying to fit into.
How's being divorced?
Fun. I like it. I prefer it. It's one of those things like in retrospect, you realize like, oh, this was a dumb idea. Like, you're like, oh man, I got in shape. I was lonely as fuck from the pandemic. I've been not drinking or doing drugs. And then I go out and I see one of my closest friends and I'm fucking drinking and doing drugs and having a good time at a wedding in the middle of nowhere. And there's love in the air. And it's like, oh, this is beautiful. And then I meet a hot fucking lady. And I'm like, I want to dump loads in that hot lady. And then I get to dump loads in that hot lady. And it's like, I'm going to marry this chick. And then you're like, oh, she's going to marry me. Well, holy shit. And then you're like, oh, fuck, the world might be ending. Let's fucking do it. Who cares? If I die, I don't want to be not married. And then like 6 months later, the world's not over. And you're like, fuck. Fuck, I had all these ideas like, well, I got to do this in case the world's ending and the world's still churning because capitalism needs its fucking grind and we need more dollars for those at the top. So the world can't end yet.
Dude, the most apocalyptic scenario I can think of is the world never ending. God. That's the scariest thing.
I love that genre of literature that it exists of exploring what would happen. Like, it's like the monkey's paw philosophy. Like, when you make a wish, there's always like a piece of the monkey's paw pulls back and there's always some negative consequence to that wish. Like, what if you were immortal and you lived forever and you couldn't die? And then it's like you're immortal and you have to watch all of your friends die and all of your family die and every person you've ever known. Not only will you have to see them from the time they're a child, but you'll have to know when they die and you'll have to know that the entire time, like, and it's just like all those things like that you would idealize.
Oh, you mean life?
Yeah, it's you're not immortal yet, but it's just.
No, I just mean anything good happens at a cost.
It's a fascinating genre to explore. There's a short story that I've been obsessed with since I was a kid, and I can't ever remember the name of it, but.
The Egg?
No, that's a great. You know, that guy wrote The Martian? The movie with Matt Damon? He wrote the book, The Martian, Andy Weir, who wrote The Egg, but the book got made into a movie about a guy having to go to Mars. No, it's a short story and I can't ever remember, maybe someone fucking put it in the comments, but, there's an immortal society and there's two groups and one of the groups are the do nows and one of the groups are the do laters and the do nows say we have unlimited time. No matter how long we're alive for, we'll always have tomorrow. So we should see what we could accomplish. How far can we run? How high can we climb? How much medicine can we figure out? Like, they do all of the serious, important jobs, engineering, architecture, the type A shit, because they're like, well, I have unlimited time. What kind of PR can I set? And then the do laters are like, well, I don't have to do anything right now because I have tomorrow. You're like, fuck it. Like, I'll chill today. So they're the artists and they're the musicians. And it's just a short story.
What's a better
story.
Place to be in?
Well, so that's the question that the short story poses is like, who would you rather be? Because infinity and unlimited time is essentially what you do have because you don't know when you're dead. The amount of time that you have is infinity until it's over. You have unlimited time because you don't know when it's going to end, but you also don't know when it's going to end. So who cares?
Yeah. Dude,
you might die today. You might die tomorrow. Let's fucking chill, dog.
You should send me that. I want to read that because I deal with that a lot on a day-to-day basis. Sometimes I'm like, I got to do all this stuff because I'm alive. And then sometimes I'm like, I'm alive. I could just lay here and enjoy my bed.
Do you ever think about like sometimes when you're like sitting there and you're in your bed and you're like, I should get up and I should go to the gym. And then you think about like starving children in Africa that haven't eaten in 3 weeks and they're getting chased by a cheetah and they're like, I have to run right now. And you're like, I should rest for them.
No,
like he can't lay down right now. I should.
No. Thinking about the pain
no
in the world motivates me to get up
in my room. Okay. Well, as a do later, you can be a do now all the fucking want, loser. I'm gonna make art.
Hey, I do that.
Dude, nothing makes me enjoy a meal more than seeing a homeless person outside that hasn't eaten. You know? You're sitting there, you're at a nice steakhouse, you look out, there's just like a crying Sarah McLachlan commercial of a person just like, yums. And you're like, they cooked this just right.
I know. Everyone's freaking out about people and children getting bombed in hospitals. And I'm over here just like, damn, dude, my house is so bomb free. Yeah. This is awesome.
Yeah, dude.
Whenever like global atrocities or atrocities happen on the news, I read them and I'm just like,
I'm so glad I'm not Chinese. What?
Yeah, it's like people are like, don't compare yourself to others unless they're doing way worse than you.
Yeah, and then it's nice.
It's got to work both ways, though.
It does. Like, for instance, I do not have anywhere near as much money or freedom as Elon Musk.
The same people that tell me not to compare myself.
So good.
The same people that tell me not to compare myself to people also tell me to be grateful in comparison to other people that have less.
I hate that.
They're women.
Yeah, they always are. There's the empathy. Yeah, like I get it. It's important. I should empathize with people's scenarios. Like, this is the end of an empire. America's crumbling. We're done. We lost. We let the fucking, it's not even just the trans agenda. It's, no, it's literally like the, all the stuff that the Republicans are freaking out about. And like, look at the fucking, they're teaching the kids to be gay and the fucking, this is all the symbols of an empire crumbling. And all the liberals are like, look at fucking Israel being bad and all of the shit. It's like all of this, we're fucked.
Wait, liberals don't like Israel?
AOC is trying to perpetuate the narrative. And I'm not educated in any of this. Also, like, I didn't even want to bring it up because I don't know anything.
Yeah, we shouldn't get into this.
Yeah, fuck it. Do your own Googling, bitch. Anyways, the point is that everybody in politics that is purported to be in charge doesn't actually give a fuck about any of the people.
They're all hostages.
They're just there to get reelected.
They're given a script. They're controlled.
All of the media is controlled.
That's why when you see them lying through their teeth and you're just watching them like, how the fuck can they just sit there and say things that are not true? Because a bunch of people in hoods that are eating babies are like, hey, you say this or we will kill your family. So their job.
We're so close to agreeing, except you have all that shit in there. I think it's just money. I don't even think it's hoods and babies and we're going to kill your parents. It's just like, hey, you were a waitress in the fucking Bronx with no fucking name and you were going to die nameless and no one would ever know who you are. And now your fucking initials are synonymous with being a liberal cunt.
Billionaires.
And that's like a whole like important thing for you. And now like a part of your family is like, oh, AOC, we're so proud of you. You're pulling yourself up by your bootstraps. You're not. You got picked as a sacrificial lamb so we can all look at you and be like, oh, maybe it could happen to me. Maybe the world is changing. Maybe my vote matters. Your vote doesn't fucking matter.
So you agree they sacrifice lambs?
I assume. I think they're killing all sorts of shit. I think that they're doing it the same way that, like, when I get laid with a really hot lady wearing a specific shirt, I wear that shirt out again. Because I'm a fucking idiot and I'm like, shit worked well. I got to do everything the same and I hope it fucking works well. And I assume one of the nights that Hillary was just popping caps and children that she won some fucking landslide vote and was like, well, if we want to win, we got to kill the fucking babies. And it probably happened back when Abraham Lincoln was like, hey, I don't really want to free the slaves, but I do want to win this war. So let's make an Emancipation Proclamation that only frees the slave in the northern colonies and does nothing about the south. So we can start a war so we can revive our economy because slavery is a problem. He probably killed a couple of fucking kids that night. It was like, I gotta keep killing children. And then they wrote it in a book that they only give to people that are in the White House. And they're like, well, if we want to accomplish anything, we gotta kill fucking babies.
The best part of that was you think you're sexy in a specific 5XL.
Brought to you by One Bone. We are making great t-shirts. No, True Classic. Who's the fat guy shirts? No, it's just like all of it's fucking bullshit. It's all fake.
My bra strap is your parachute.
My warm up is your workout shirt. My appetizer is your pre-fee. Fucking pores, dude. I love Tom Segura going on that rant on Twitter.
My snack is your quadruple bypass.
Yeah. My nap is your good night's rest.
Dude, sometimes I forget how much you know about history. It's
I don't know anything. I'm an idiot. I don't know anything. But I don't.
You're wrong about all of it, but.
Yeah, probably. I don't know.
But you have things to say, and that's nice.
I understand people wanting to care, want to try and make a difference, but you're too late. You were born in the wrong time. It's like if you wanted to be a black athlete and you were born in 1910. Well, too fucking bad. No, you got to wait for Jesse Owens to win a fucking Olympics.
You can make a difference, but you have to make
billions. What, by killing yourself with a poetic note? How are you going to make a difference?
Yes, that.
Oh, yeah. Tell me three words from Chester Bennington's suicide letter. I can tell you five.
Fuck, dude.
In the end, yeah, that's doesn't even matter.
That's literally what I was trying to say. Words, I couldn't remember the song. That's literally what I was going for. No, you can make a difference by becoming a billionaire.
And do you know the last two words in Kurt Cobain's suicide letter? Rape me.
You're just quoting their songs.
Yeah, it's a good song. It's so cool he made that song.
About me.
Yeah. Eli, rape me.
There's some girl out there. You know he made this song about me?
Yeah, her name's Courtney Love. And then she made a response called Hole.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. She killed him for sure.
Oh, for sure. Rebecca, Courtney Love killed Kurt Cobain?
100%.
Let's fucking go, dude. Let's fucking go.
Women.
Yeah, they're, I mean, 17.
Bad at driving, months. Good at killing men.
She owned a shotgun. Do your own Googling, friends. You know, we don't have any opinions, but she owned a shotgun. I just, like, you know, one of the things that, like, I always appreciate about the first rendition of Giggle Boys is that you would tell me things like, the pyramids are batteries. And some people have long skulls, and that's when the aliens raped us into becoming people for monkeys and such.
It's true.
And, like, I always, like, listened to that and was like, well, Eli's on a different part of the internet than me. You know? I'm watching people with
it's
Down
syndrome. It's reaching you now, huh?
Yeah, well, I'm watching people with Down syndrome trying to cook. I'm like, this is.
You're saying I'm retarded and you're watching literal retards.
They're the
try to
bastard.
Cook a turkey. They're New Zealanders.
And they're Australian. Don't call them Kiwis, you racist.
And they're not brothers. They look
They
the
are
same.
Not brothers. That's fucked up. You got to put a disclaimer. Hey, these Chinese Downs aren't related.
What are their names?
Sean and Marley.
What's
Get
the
down with Instagram? Sean and Marley.
Yeah, it's a Down syndrome cooking show.
Dude, did you see that they had Big Clay-Doh on?
No.
So there's another. So this is the best part.
Who?
So I'm telling you. So Get Down with Sean and Marley is Sean and Marley, and it's a cooking show. And they started off just doing some cooking stuff together. Occasionally they would try like sparkling water. They'd meet other chefs, but they're aspiring chefs. So they're doing food related shows. And then they started having guests on. They had another girl. I don't know where the girl came from, but she is one of those like level 3 Down syndrome where she just has goofball face, but her brain works fine. So she is like being caring.
Wait, level 3 is less retarded than level 1?
Oh, yeah, less. Level 1 is the most retarded. Yeah. Level 1 is a Pokemon. Level 1 is like, spoon!
You know,
like
they see a spoon. I've heard you do this on stage, and I agree 100%. I had three Down syndrome kids that I were in my school in elementary school, and they're 1, 2, and 3.
They're graded. It's
There's one. His name was Trevor. He couldn't talk, and he just screamed and molested girls, and he smeared his poop all over the bathroom.
Level 1.
And then there's Kyle, who he was nice. We hung out. We jumped on the trampoline together, and then sometimes I would come home, and he would just be in my parents' house going through my fridge.
Level 2. So and Kyle, then, so that for those that haven't heard me do this joke on stage, it's kind of a joke, but it's also kind of how I feel. Level 1 is a Pokemon. That's like the worst Down syndrome you can have. It's where you got all goofballed up everywhere and you can like,
they do kind of look like the surprise Pikachu. Just
Sean is a level 1 because like when they're like, Sean, go get a spoon. Sean is like, spoon! And then he grabs a spoon and he always grabs a metal spoon, no matter if you tell him wooden, plastic, or anything in between.
By the spoon part.
He goes to the drawer and he grabs the wooden, the metal spoon by the spoon part. Level 2.
I was joking.
Is what Marley? No, he does. And level 2 is Marley, which is like a dog with one of those communication buttons. You know, like they can kind of get a message across, like me hungry. You know, with Sean, Marley knows they need a wooden spoon. He doesn't know why. He doesn't have any idea. But he goes wooden spoon. And then when Sean grabs the metal spoon, he goes. He knows it's wrong, but he doesn't know why. Level 3. which is what I describe as a rhino, which in politics, rhino is Republican in name only. In Down's world, it's retarded in name only because they've got goofball face, but their brains work perfect. So like Mary, the girl chef that's a level three, she knows they need a wooden spoon because they're using like a hot nonstick pan, and like metal will scrape it and plastic will melt. So she's got to get a wooden spoon. So like she's like, I need a wooden spoon. And then Marley's like, wooden spoon. And then Sean's like, spoon, and grabs a metal spoon. And it's 45 seconds and it has 10 million views. It's fucking perfect. They had another guest on named Clayton Hobbs. Clayton has a Instagram called Clayton's World. That's him and his brother. Clayton is a level one. And Clayton is awesome. And he loves chicken burgers. And he does a whole dance where he's like, chicken burger. It rules. So they had him on. And Sean and Marley and Clayton cooked a chicken burger. How if cool
you,
is that?
If you could take a pill that would give you Down syndrome for 6 hours.
Do I know it wears off?
Yes.
For sure it for wears sure, off? Yeah. I'm taking it every day. Taking it every single fucking day.
That was going to be my follow-up
question. Every single day. I might snort it so I get 3 hours of super Downs.
Well, what if it didn't wear off? What would be the difference if you're just going to do it every day?
I just want 6 hours. I want to know at the end of it, I can go back to being like, oh, the world, you know? I would take it the same
that
way.
That would be the worst come down ever.
Oh, my God. Coming out of retard, you're just like,
oh, you got bills due? Oh,
fuck.
Yeah.
Fuck. Fuck. I swear to God, I was just retarded.
That's kind of how being born was for me.
Justin, I want to pose this question to you. Oh, thank you. I want to pose this question to you. Eli just asked me this, and I think it's a great question because it's very fun to think about. If there was a pill you could take and it would give you Down syndrome for 6 hours, but it 100% wears off, would you take it? What do you mean? I just said it gives you Down syndrome.
What are you, happy?
Are you happy? Oh, yeah? Yeah, show one of them the color yellow.
I think if he had heard the whole discussion, he'd be on board.
I get it.
I would take it every day.
So much fun. I used to say...
But I'm already retarded.
No, not that way.
Not enough.
Because you know. You know that you're retarded. They don't know. They have no idea. They're just like, the world is my oyster! Yes.
Down syndrome cool, people. Right? Down syndrome people still get their heart broken though.
Probably on an hourly basis.
Well, yeah, because they're like, "Why won't my stuffed animal kiss me?"
Forget the strength.
Ooh,
that's a great question. That's a great question.
Ooh, I'm taking it every day in weight training.
It's basically injecting ketamine and steroids.
Oh shit, this exists.
Me just flipping my fucking nightstand upside down.
Oh no, is that how we got cowboy diplomacy? No, I love you, Brad. That's fun.
Yeah, shout out to Brad. I love you, dude.
Yeah, dude, he fucking rips.
And Matt and Ian and Samir.
Perfect. I would definitely take the Downs pill. Have you done any of the 2C psychedelics? 2CI, 2CE, 2CB?
No, those started coming around after I got sober. But I've been considering it because it's not a relapse if it's a drug you've never done before.
Well, that's not how that works. Yeah, what?
It's not a relapse. It's a lapse.
It's not a relapse if I start taking fentanyl if I'm clean from heroin.
No, those are the same drug.
I'm Portland sober. I only do fentanyl. I'm Mac Miller sober. I only do coke that I think is fentanyl. I'm Kate Quigley sober. I only do just kidding. That is, dude, I feel so bad for her. Like, I know it's a joke, but like, could you imagine you go to a comedy show, you do a spot with your friends, you're all having a good time. It's one of those crazy nights. You all drank too much. You're up till 4 a.m. And then someone's like, hey, I got a bag. And you're like, all right. And you all do a couple bumps. And then you're back at someone's house and you're in the Hollywood Hills. And you're all just thinking like, man, we're on top of the world. We're having the best time. I'm with my favorite friends. You're listening to music. And we do a couple more bumps. And then you're like, man, I'm pretty fucking tired.
You hear a loud thud. You look over. No, your best friend's on the ground.
No. Well, maybe that would be even scarier. This is like a Saw thing. Because you're like, man, I'm getting kind of tired. And then you look over and your friend's like, you're like, damn, everybody's passing out. I guess I'll lay down. And then you go to sleep And then you wake up.
And it smells.
And you come to and you're like, oh man, my head hurts. I drank so much last night. Fuck. And then you look over and your buddy's still passed out and you go to shake him awake and he's cold. And you're like, ah! And then you scream. I hope that was very real for somebody to fuck you.
I felt that, yeah.
Yeah, no, that shit sucks.
I hope I don't have to experience that.
Dead bodies? Yeah, I don't know. That's a cool gang sign to make up, though. I don't know, man. I really have gotten to the point where, like, I don't care if anybody gets their feelings hurt or is upset.
I thought you were going to say I don't care if one of my friends overdoses.
No. I really don't care if one of my friends overdoses. I'm going to get so many Instagram comments the next day when I post a picture of us together.
Like, so jealous.
Yeah, what are you talking about? Oh, Giggle Boys couldn't come back because Eli died? Ah, tear. He was so strong. I should have worked out like him.
In my death, I leave you with sympathy, pussy.
Thank you. Dude, this is 100% a real story. So like maybe like a month or month and a half ago, I was dog ass sick. I felt just fucking terrible. And I'd been sick for a minute and it was like an upper respiratory thing. And I get sinus infections all the time and sometimes they turn into that. But this one was particularly bad. And I didn't know, is it I'm getting older and my body's falling apart or is it like something bad? So I took an at-home COVID test. I test positive. I'm like, oh, fuck, because I haven't done anything to prevent COVID in my body in any way. I'm who dies. You know,
you mean those syringes might have been dirty that you found on the ground?
I hope so. The HIV is my only shot at weight loss. But so dirty needle, that's my new nickname. But so I'm like, oh, fuck, I have COVID. I go to an emergency care center to go and make sure it's not like super bad. Have them check out my lungs and they listen to my breathing and they're like, it's pretty labored. And I was like, well, I jogged back here, you know, but like, we're going to do an X-ray of your lungs just so over the next 5 days, if it gets worse, we have like a baseline for where your lungs are. So they take me, they have me strip fucking topless and I'm showing off my sweet rack to this fucking poor ER tech. And I got my hands up and they do an X-ray and then they bring the X-rays back after like 20 minutes and they put the X-rays up on the thing. And in my left lung, there's a huge shadow. It looks like a mass. And the doctor goes, we don't know what this is, but it is very concerning. We're going to go and check on it. I'm going to go and look in the back. So doctor leaves me with the X-rays and I'm looking at it thinking like, I have lung cancer. I've been smoking cigarettes since I was 16. Like I haven't smoked a cigarette in 6-7 years, but you know, like I did for a long time. I've dipped a bunch. I smoke weed. I vape. I'm smoking robot dicks all the day. You know, like this is lung cancer. This is karma. I've got it. And my first thought was not, oh no, I'm going to die. My first thought was to take a picture of it and see which girls I could send it to that would suck my dick. Like, who's going to feel bad? Like, oh, I'm on the way out. You know, who wants some dick with an expiration date, ladies? You know, and then they had me redo the X-rays and it turns out it was just like a shadow and I'm not dying. And it was like, fuck, I don't even have cancer. Like,
you can still say
how
it out.
Am I going to get a comedy special if I don't even have cancer? A straight, white, fat male with no opinions on Israel-Palestine. I don't know how I'm going to get a special in 2023 with this boring-ass lineup of a personality.
Yeah, Mike asked me the other day. He was like, how often do you, like, wake up and think you're going to die and, like, your chest is closing in? And I was like, never, dude. I feel me great either. All the time. He was like, but you said that you everything hurt and you were sad. And I was like, yeah, that's because I was depressed and just like emotionally everything hurt. And you're like, oh, I misread that totally. I thought your skinny people were in pain. I'm like, no, dude, I feel great. My body feels awesome. Dude, you should do what Darian did and lose a bunch of weight.
I don't want to.
Yeah, you do.
I want to have fun.
It's fun to.
Because I'm a girl. And girls just want to have fun. I identify as Cyndi Lauper.
Who's that?
Justin, do you feel old? No. I bet your body feels better than mine.
What are you, 41, you said? Don't look a day over 42.
Dude, that rips.
I said that to someone earlier.
Dude, if I make it to 40, that's going to be so sick. Here's hoping.
I was talking about this earlier. I hope I get on like a news, like a big show where I'm like breaking the news about some elite program going on. And I'm like, I just want to say before I release this information that I am suicidal. And if you want to take me out, it's pretty easy.
I arrived at the Austin airport. One sec.
Austin airport, you say?
Addictions.
The best airport in the world.
Dude, it's probably the fucking best airport. And I'm not going to tell you why because it'll ruin it for me. But I'll tell you after because I love you. But I was getting into Austin airport. I was flying in from DC and I had a late fucking flight. So I didn't land in Austin till like 8:30, which sucks shit. And for whatever reason, when you land on a late flight at Bergstrom, they only land at the furthest fucking gates. So it's so stupid.
When you land on what?
If you land after 6 p.m., you don't land on like 13 through 18. You land at like 29 or fucking 3. And then you have to walk a fucking mile inside for no fucking reason. But so I like,
when I get off the plane in Austin, I run. I get off the plane and I fucking sprint past everyone. And everyone looks like me like I'm an insane person.
I love that.
And so, they're right. But it gets me outside fast.
So here's the situation. I land, I think, so scheduled landing is 8:20, but I guess we took a shortcut or whatever those fucking sneaky bastards in the front are doing. And we land somehow, I don't know, at 7:50. And I'm like, fuck yeah, we're like 30 minutes early. This rips. These lying pieces of shit could do this every time and they don't, you know? So we land and then we have to wait fucking forever because we got there early to have a fucking gate to pull up to. Meanwhile, in the middle, I'm like, hey, go to the middle.
That's what they mean. Idiot. That's what they mean about the landing time, too. They add in how much it takes to get to the thing.
But so we finally Darian was picking me up. I left him my car while I was out of town and he was coming to pick me up because he's a good friend. And I was on the 9 p.m. show at Sunset. So at 7:50 when I land, I was like, oh, fucking no sweat. I'm going to make it. So fine. I can go do my spot and go home. I can get an early night's rest. It'll be great. It's 8:30 and I'm still not off the plane. I'm like, what the fuck? Finally, we get to a gate and everybody starts deboarding. It was an oversold flight. So there were no overhead spaces available. And the last thing they said before
that should be illegal. That's fraud.
I agree. They should all die. I hope every CEO of an airline dies tomorrow.
You know who else thought that?
Of AIDS.
Ted Kaczynski, the Unabomber.
I'm on his side.
He sent a bomb to the CEO of United Airlines.
Maybe use who FedEx instead of USPS, you fucking idiot.
Who ended up United Airlines doing 9/11.
Oh, so they took his bomb and dropped it off at a building? Oh, yeah, he did 9/11, not the fucking thermite in the fucking buildings beforehand.
Well, United Airlines did 9/11. You could argue who was behind
United
it.
Airlines well, we didn't do anything it. More than make a dent in a field in Pennsylvania. They're fucking George Bush did 9/11.
But I have seen some questionable CGI where the plane just like disappears into the building and you're like, hang on.
But so anyway, so I'm going to get off the flight. We're deboarding. And I just distinctly remember on the flight out, like as we were like getting ready to leave and in the boarding process multiple times, 50 fucking times. We are a full flight today, so make sure that you only have one item in the overhead bin and a personal item in the under the seat in front of you. Over, fucking over. This lady's voice is ruining my brain. I just hear it. And then I'm watching people deplane, and like three different people are pulling a fucking backpack and a fucking suitcase out of the overhead bins. And I'm like, dead, 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 dead. I hope you all die. I hope you fall off the plane and your children fall and die in front of you, and then you die. You piece of shit. I hate you. And I'm thinking all these mean thoughts.
Dude, I can tell. I can tell when you're really mad on Instagram because you'll just film. Like, the picture will be awful. It'll be bad quality. And you'll say something like, this guy's the worst.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, Mike's fucking pissed. Furious. Right now.
But so they're deboarding the plane. And then I see a guy and he's 10 rows in front of me. So he's probably row 15. So right around the exits. And he's got a fucking ponytail up in a man bun. And my first thought was, die. Die. I don't know if it's like the Republican in me or how I was raised, or I don't know if it's that I'm an actual man. I don't know what it is, but you have a ponytail and you're supposed to be a boy. Die, 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 die. So I'm just thinking that in my head, but I don't say it. I don't do anything with those thoughts because like sometimes I have prejudice and it's wrong. And then ponytail man takes a sweatshirt from his seat and starts shoving it into the overhead. And then he takes a hat from the seat, pulls out a hat box from the overhead, puts his hat in the hat box. He put an empty hat box in the overhead bin on an oversold flight. And then he pulls out a plastic fucking bag that he had just shoved the fucking sweater into. And then he pulls out a backpack and I'm losing my shit. Like, this guy had a backpack, a hat box, and a fucking grocery store bag in the fucking thing. None of those went in front of you. None of those went in front of you. I fucking hate you so much. And he like waves and apologizes to all the people that are now waiting for the fucking 40-step process of this man getting out of the plane. And as he gets all loaded up with everything, he grabs a suitcase out of the overhead bin. And I audibly said, "Fuck you!" I yelled from 10 seats back, "Fuck you!" And like a couple people around me laughed, and the person with the child was like, "What the fuck, man?" Like, yeah, but no, you know. So it's a whole thing. And like, so then like, you know, it's now it's 10 rows. So it's still 60 people that got to get out in front of me. And they're all doing it. And directly in front of me, I had just brought a backpack for this flight. So I literally have nothing. I'm just standing in the aisle like, let's go, you know, just waiting. Directly in front of me, there's a lady and she's a very small black lady. And so I'm like immediately like, all right, you know, just do your thing. She pulls out of the overhead bin a small bag, like a little bag. Then she pulls out a suitcase, and then she pulls out a poster tube. And then from over here, she pulls out a backpack. And I'm just sitting there like, four items. And if I yell fuck you again, now it's racist. So I'm just like, ah! And I'm standing directly behind her, just boiling, boiling with rage. And now it's 8:40. The show starts at 9. I'm not even to my fucking car. The Darian's in, who's been waiting for 20 minutes now for a plane that we've been there. So,
how dare these people own property?
I hate all of them. And so, but gate check it. But check it at the, oh God, killed him. Fly Spirit, you poor fuck. Anyways, so.
I fly Spirit. I don't have problems with
so
people.
So now I'm walking out of the aisle and I'm just walking as quick as I can behind this lady, just fucking biting my lip like you're not going to say anything. And we get to the very end. Literally the very end. It's also a connecting flight where it goes through to San Diego. So the first two front rows are full. There's three and three. All of them are fully. So I can't like sneak around her. And she's standing just far enough in front of me that like if I was super fucking rude, I could bump her and walk past her. But other than that, there's no way I'm getting through. And then she stops and there's a man who is restocking the snacks. The snack cart is in the front of the plane and he has a big old fucking bag of the Southwest snacks and he's throwing them into one of the trays. She goes, "Excuse me. Excuse me." And he goes, "What?" She goes, "I have a connecting flight and we got here kind of late. I'm worried that I'm not going to make it." And he goes, "Okay." And she goes, "Can you tell me where my connecting flight is?" And he's actively loading snacks into the thing. And he goes, "There's a screen outside. Go out there." And I go, "Fucking thank you." And I guess it had just been boiling up. But the like pressure on the on fucking startled the woman in front of me. And she goes, "I'm sorry, I haven't flown before." And I go, "Don't do it again." And she steps out. It looks like she starts to have a mental breakdown. And I start to feel like a tinge of like regret. Like I shouldn't have yelled at this poor. It's another human being. And they're trying to traverse the universe the same as me. And life is hard. And she probably had a harder journey than I did. And it's like, oh, man, what a bummer. And I turned around to say, "Hey, I'm sorry for being rude." And I saw her fumbling with the poster tube in the bag that she had. And I turned around, "Serves you fucking right, bitch." And I just like, but the reason I started telling this story is I get out and I'm walking and I'm in such a fucking foul mood and I got to go do comedy and I'm just trying to feel better. And I walk the fucking mile and a half they make you walk to finally get to the exit. And when you get to the exit at Bergstrom Airport, there are three escalators and a stairs right in front of you. And then directly to your left is a small window about 5 feet wide of glass railing. And then directly below it is the baggage claim. And all I could think is, if I sprint, I could swan dive off this shit and just fall at the baggage claim and kill myself there. And there would be no funnier place to kill yourself than at arrival at another city. You dealt with all the bullshit of the flight. You sat all fucking packed in like a sardine. And you waited 3.5 hours to get somewhere to just dive at the exit and kill yourself.
That's pretty good.
I'm
surprised that doesn't happen more, honestly.
Just thinking about jumping off of that next to the escalator made me feel so much better about all those fuckheads on the plane. That I was like,
oh. Oh yeah, there was definitely a time when I first started getting sober, like about 7-8 months ago, where the only thing that would make me laugh was thinking about suicide.
I get it.
I would just think about funny ways to kill myself, and that was the only thing that would bring a smile to my face for like weeks.
I understand. It's a great fantasy. Most people are like, what would you do if you won the lottery? And I'm like, gun in my mouth.
A really fancy gun. A solid gold gun.
First off, I'm stuffing it with caviar. And then I go, bah! You've never eaten beluga like this, bitch. I'd get a gun made out of whalebone so it didn't taint the taste of the caviar. Metal distastes the caviar. It reacts with it. You can't use a metal spoon on caviar like a pour. You gotta use whalebone.
You could make a shank out of a baculum.
There's like six people that are going to see this and be like, this guy gets it.
You could make a shank out of a baculum.
What's a baculum? I know the word.
It's a penis bone that's
in
whales.
Yeah, a dork.
Yeah.
The whale penis is a dork and it has a baculum in it.
Yeah, it's got a bone in it.
It's so weird that their boner is a bone.
Makes sense.
What's your favorite animal?
Man, Pablo.
Yeah, that's fair. What?
My dog.
All right, someone you're not in a relationship with.
I'm going to say tiger or gorilla.
Tiger or gorilla? Pick one.
Tiger.
Siberian?
Orange.
Yes. Man, it's wow. It's one of the things I love talking to you. It's like you're like a lady sometimes. You have these bad answers.
It's a great answer.
So, to the people out there that are saying the Giggle Boys can never come back, it's not funny, it's bad, we don't want to watch it. Why did they have that podcast in the first place? We should cancel them. 1 star on Apple Podcasts. To all of the haters out there of Giggle Boys, what do you have to say, Eli?
I'm on your side.
Ooh, I wish I hadn't taken a drink. Oh, it went in my nose. Oh, you hear that? You're right. The internet. Dude, I think this has been perfect.
Yeah, this is a lot of fun, man.
If you were to have shows coming up, where would they be?
Probably the Mothership. That's where they would be.
Oh, my God. All right.
If I had one. I don't have any coming up.
A man can dream.
A clip hit 1 million views today. I'm just holding on to that for now.
Well,
and then tomorrow it's gone. It's over.
Octavius Thunder? Or is it Cricket Lord MMA?
It's Cricket Lord MMA, but the name on it is Octavius Thunder.
Fucking fix that. It's so hard. You can't tell people to type two different retarded things.
I know. I'm trying to...
Go follow Golden Cricket. You know how I talk about those stupid fucking protein bars? That was just some fucking greedy ploy to capture the market based
on... What the hell, man? I thought I was sponsoring you.
Here at Highly Social, we only believe in honest sponsorships.
No. No, you've made more money off Golden Cricket than I have.
That's as a $7 in year. I'm killing it. No, I've always been by Golden Cricket since the beginning because I think it is a really cool idea. And I genuinely stand by them. And I remember, and I've said this on multiple platforms now, but I remember when there was a Michelin star chef touted on Tim Ferriss's show for making the first cricket protein bar, XO. And I ordered the sample pack and I went through all the marketing and I tried it and it tasted like fucking dog shit. It was absolutely disgusting. You could not get out of your mind that you were eating a cricket and it made me gag. And as a fat, food shouldn't do that to me ever. And I remember the first time when we were taste testing and you finally got the bars from them. And I tried the bars. It's like, oh, my God, this is incredible. And then for Never Gonna Make It, you were a sponsor and you gave us some of the horchata protein powder mix. And I tried the horchata protein powder on my own because I was desperate for food and I was hungry and we were in the middle of fucking nowhere and there was nothing else. I probably did it the fattest way and mixed it with whole milk and ice and put it in a blender.
That's not bad.
But it's fucking incredible. It's great. The flavor is perfect. It's got little hints of cinnamon. The vanilla is forward. And it's a genuine horchata flavor with great macros for you people that care about that. But it tastes good for you fats like me that are just trying to make one good decision a day. But I genuinely stand by Golden Cricket, and I'm glad for everything you've done. And I'm glad to have you here, and I hope that we can really make Giggle Boys come back.
Hell yeah.
I think the people want to see it.
Thanks for having me, dude.
Thanks for being here. So Cricket Lord MMA, anywhere else people can find you?
Check out my raps on Spotify under the name Brody Lowballer.
And check out his rapes on X videos. No. No, they keep removing them. No. No, dude, I fucking love you. This has been great.
Animated.
Justin, thank you so much for man behind the scenes, Creek in the Cave. You're the best of all time. This has been Highly Social. I've been your host, Mike Eaton. Suck my fat cock.